On this episode of the podcast, I'm sharing with you Alma's birth story. But before we get started on the episode, I wanted to let you know that I'm getting quite close to the birth of my baby, and with that, I will soon be taking a break from the podcast. If you're listening to this in real time, then I want to let you know that I'm planning to continue the episodes until the end of May 2023, and that after that, I will be taking my maternity leave for a few months. I don't have a clear plan yet as to when I will come back with new episodes, so I'm going to keep you curious and on your toes for that. Stay tuned! Let's get back to Alma. In this episode, Alma shares her quite challenging experience of dealing with a late diagnosis of preeclampsia, which was then continuing into an induction and to a cesarean birth. Alma so vulnerably shares how one of her biggest fears was having a cesarean, and how throughout her pregnancy, she didn't really look at that fear and deal with it. She also talked about the disappointing and quite difficult experience that she had after the surgery, where she was in the recovery ward, separated from her baby. She talked about the really primal instinct and the desire to see her baby, feeling confused and angry at the fact that they were not together. It was my honor to hold space for Alma to share this story on the podcast and to bring forward some parts of our conversation and her story. Thank you for being here with me today, and let's get started. Welcome to the Birthing in Finland podcast, brought to you by the Nest Doulas. I'm Danielle Bensky, a mother and postpartum doula specializing in maternal well-being and psychology. Each episode, you'll hear eye-opening interviews with some amazing people who support families in Finland just like yours. We'll help you navigate what it means to birth in Finland, growing your confidence on your parenting journey. Thank you for spending time with me today. Now let's jump into our daily dose of birthing in Finland. Hi, and welcome to the Birthing in Finland podcast. Today on the show, we're going to do a birth story episode. And with me, I have Alma, who is going to be sharing her story. Hi, Alma.
Hey, hi.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast to share your story. Before we jump into it, as we've been kind of doing, if our listeners have been listening to previous episodes, I'd like for you to introduce yourself so people know a little bit about your context, your background, how long you've been in Finland. Do you speak the language? Does your partner speak the language? A little bit about yourself, and in what situation were you when you came into giving birth? And when was it also?
Okay. Hello, my name is Alma. I am from Kenya. I have been here for close to 2 years now, and I speak very little Finnish.
Okay. Well, 2 years is... I would have been very surprised.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. So what else did I need to say?
About your partner? Do they know Finnish?
Yes, I'm married to a Finnish man. Yes, he speaks very good Finnish. Okay. Yes.
And the other part was, when was the birth?
So I gave So I gave birth on the 1st of September 2022.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. It's important. I mean, especially with COVID times and also knowing how recent it was for people, that's also one of the reasons I'm asking, just so people understand what it was like in the system, in the hospitals at that time. Think otherwise, that was a great intro.
Okay. That's good.
So to go from there, would you like to say more on what you were doing in the preparation for your labor, or how were you feeling coming up to the labor when you were pregnant?
Okay. Yes. So I think I prepared really well for the labor. I mean, I think like any other person, I set my birth plan. I was doing a lot of yoga before then, and I prepared my partner. We actually were writing the birth plan together, and you know, I froze my meals. I packed my hospital bag. You know, I was taking, I was reading online on what to take so that when during the labor can go on just nicely. So I was taking a lot of pineapple juice and drinking a lot of
raspberry leaf. Could it be that one?
Yes. Yes. Yes, I took a lot of that one. And I walked a lot. And, you know, during that time of when it started getting near, I was now starting to mentally prepare, okay, that this baby is about to get here. So I did a lot of breathing exercises. And I think the last part was watching a lot of positive birth stories. Mm-hmm. So yes, I think I would like to say that I was well prepared for the labor.
And what were you feeling coming up? Like, were you having fears, or was watching this positive stuff, was that helping you deal with some anxieties?
Yeah. Okay. So I would like to say that my biggest fear was to go under the knife, the CS, and the positive birth stories really did help a lot. So I tried avoiding the negative ones. And because I knew two people who were giving birth before me, I specifically asked them not to tell me if it went badly. But yes, I would like to say that the positive birth stories helped me come a little bit. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think we'll get back to this later, because I think it's an interesting topic. Like, on one hand, watching just the positive, and on the other hand, facing, like, if does that mean that you're not facing your fear? What is the consequence of that?
Yes.
So we can touch on that a bit later.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's an interesting conversation, I think, to have. I was also, in my preparation for my daughter's birth, I was kind of not willing to listen to any negative stories, or which I suppose is a good thing, because it gives you and it shows you the possibility that you can have a positive experience.
Right.
But if you have a very explicit fear, to avoid looking in the eyes of that fear is also not going to be helpful, which I also did with my first. And I was, in that sense, like, I say now that I was the perfect candidate for postpartum trauma, or like birth trauma, because I wasn't prepared for an alternative scenario. And in my birth, there wasn't an alternative scenario. It went, you know, smoothly in that sense. But had it not, I was not prepared to look my fear in the eye. I didn't want to do that.
Right.
So it's, we can talk about this more later.
Yes. It's interesting. Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is what really happened to me. Yeah. But,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So this was helpful for you in the preparation. What were your thoughts on a doula? Did you know about doulas? Did you have a doula?
So that's the thing. I did not know about a doula until one of my friends, 1 week, I think actually a few days before I went into the hospital, she mentions, she asked me, "Hey, do you have a doula?" And I was asking her, "Okay, what's a doula? Oh, who is a doula? What's a doula?" Mm-hmm. So yeah. I did not have a clue until she mentioned it, and then I remember I was thinking, "Wow, I wish I could." I knew such a person way before I got to this point, because I think it sounds cool, and it sounds like probably I would be in better hands if I had one or I would get, you know, better help.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't know about a doula. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else on the preparation side or the moments before the birth and the pregnancy experience that you want to share?
The pregnancy was really, I think towards the end, I think it's probably for everyone, it was very tough for me. So I just wanted, I really just wanted for the baby to be out at some point. I was so tired.
Yeah.
I wanted for the baby to be out. But I was also, because I remember the last day of Nevola, that's when I was sent to the hospital. And I remember thinking, oh, I am not ready for this. I don't think I'm ready for this. It feels so early, even though it was like 3-4 days towards the day of the birth. But I guess the pregnancy, at this point, I was super tired and over it, and I wanted that baby out.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That's why it takes those 9 months, right? In the beginning, ooh, you're like, I'm not ready for this at all. And then the end, you're just like, let's get this over with.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. It takes time to prepare.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's start with your birth experience and how did it start off?
Okay, so like I mentioned on, I think it was 29th of August, 2022, I go to the hospital, to the Nevola, to check for, that was my last hospital Nevola checkup. And
were you, how many weeks at this point?
At this point, I was 39 plus 6 days. So I remember I passed by the toilet to check the urine, and I went straight to the BP, checking my blood pressure. And then I took this to the nurse. I was a bit late. So when I took this to the nurse, she checks and okay, she is a little bit, okay. I see something on her face and she asks, are you sure that you checked this correctly? And I'm like, yeah, I did. And she takes another test of my blood pressure. And she tells me, did you come here running? She asks if I came running. And I say, no, we just casually, I was riding a bicycle that time. So we just rode slowly with my husband. And she tells me, okay, I'm going to give you like 5 minutes and then I will check this, your blood pressure again. And she says the blood pressure is a bit high and she needs to check it again. So we wait for 5 minutes. We're just casually talking here and there. And she texts again and my blood pressure doesn't seem, it's actually really super high. So she tells me to wait, she gives me a bit, like 10 minutes again, and she tells me, okay, let's check this one again, and if it's still this high, you have to go to the hospital.
And your blood pressure had been fine all throughout the pregnancy?
Yes, yeah. Yes. So when she checks after 10 minutes, it's still like super high and it's not stabilizing. And she tells me, okay, now I don't think you should actually go back home. I think you should just go straight to the hospital. And calmly, and, you know, we were so positive with my husband. My husband was asking, are you sure we cannot wait? And she said, no, just go straight to the hospital. And then from the hospital, they'll tell you if you need to go back home.
Did she explain what this means and
yes,
why it could be a risk, like any other information?
No, here's the thing. Because I think Nevola, we have the slots. Every person has a time slot. So we were running, I think it was like 30 minutes. She just said that I suspect that you might have preeclampsia, and it's fatal for you and the baby, but you need to go to the hospital. So she just mentioned really lightly. We didn't know what preeclampsia was. Okay, I had an idea, a little idea. But when she mentioned preeclampsia, I told my husband, okay, we have to go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so from Nevola, we just went to Yorvi, and we waited for like 10, 15 minutes to see the midwife who took the tests, and the blood pressure was still like super high. They gave me some water to take, and after a while we tested for my urine, and I had protein in my urine. So the midwife says, before we go home, I need to see the doctor, and the doctor now is the one to determine if I'm to go home or not. So we wait for the doctor. And the doctor comes in and says, okay, from your results, I don't think it's safe for you to go home. You need to stay here, and your husband can also stay here. And then we will start the labor process either during the night or in the morning. And I remember thinking, oh, okay, that's too soon. Maybe just wait a bit. But now they started preparing me, when they started talking about the labor process and inducing me, that's when it started hitting me, okay, this baby is just about to come. So I remember my husband was actually still positive. He was thinking, he was telling me that I think it's too soon. This baby should be here in 4 days, not now. And I'm thinking, well, the babies will be here whenever they want to be. it's not about when they will be here. It's really never like the definite time that's stated on the paper. So he went back home to bring a few supplies and to bring my hospital bag, and we slept in the hospital. But before sleeping, they took two more tests, and my pressure could not stabilize, and the urine was still there.
Mm-hmm.
So at around 1 a.m., they inserted a ball, the ball, the water ball. I think it's a, yes,
balloon, they insert, maybe?
The balloon. Sorry, yeah, they inserted the balloon. Ball, yeah, so they inserted
the
balloon.
They are similar, they are both round, so
yes. Yeah,
in so Finnish, they call it balonki.
What
I think in Finnish they are calling it balonki.
Balonki, yes, they inserted the balonki, and that's how it started. So we get to the morning, and the doctor comes in again to check the urine and the pressure, and it's still like super high. And then she says that there's no progress with the labor, and the water has not broken. So they need to send me to Naisten Klinika. And I asked them, but why are you sending me there? Why can't we just have this baby here? And they told me that they don't have the enough facilities to handle my case. And that's like 5 minutes, 5 hours later, that's when I was taken by the ambulance to Naisten Klinika. So yeah, that's the first part. That's how it started.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel contractions after the balloon?
Nothing.
No. Okay.
No, nothing. I remember I was just thinking, okay, it's like, I think this baby, even now I started thinking with my husband, I think this baby is not really ready to come out. But yeah, there was no contractions or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we get to Nystan Clinic and they check for both urine and pressure, and it's still like super bad. And now they insert something to check the baby's blood pressure, or was it pressure? The one that they insert and
the head, the heart.
The head, yes, the heartbeat.
So they had broken your waters.
No, that was before.
Yeah, they usually break the water before they insert the heart monitor on the head.
Uh-huh, yeah. Okay, so this was then after. Okay, yeah, after. Yeah, this was after. But they had set their belt for me.
Okay. Yeah.
To listen to the baby's pressure. Yeah. Yes.
Heart.
So the heartbeat. So they put the belts on me, and I was put on a bed rest. And I remember handing them, I had handed my documents to them, and one of them was my birth plan, which I had stated that I wanted to be in the water.
Birthing pool.
The birthing pool. And this really, I remember asking, can I get into the pool? Is it possible? And they said, no, at this point, it's not possible with the machines around you. And I asked then, can I walk around? Can I take a walk? And no, I cannot do that either. So, well, anyway. Well, I remember I was received by the really good nurses who took care of me. And by this time, the surgeons now, a doctor and a surgeon, they came to see me, and they were asking, you know, they were now started preparing me mentally about a CS. So they were telling me that I think that this is the only way. If your water has not, at this point, my water had not broken. Your water has not broken, and the labor has not started. I think this is the only solution we have for you. And I was so adamant about it. I remember even in my birth plan, I had written everything about natural birth and everything. And the last one sentence about CS, the C-section, and it was just, it just stated, okay, just in case I go to the C-section, please I don't want to go through, I had written, if I go for the C-section and I'm not awake by the time the baby is out, please give my husband to do the skin-to-skin contact, you know. So, like, that was the only thing about C-section. So, okay. So the first day in Nystan Clinic, the water did not break, and I slept through the night with the balloon on. And in the morning, the doctors again came back, and they checked my cervix to see if it's open, and I was at 2 centimeters. So they still, you know, put the word out there, like, okay, so maybe the C-section is still like the option here. And I tell them that we're still willing to wait if the baby is okay, is still okay, and he seemed to be okay. We're willing to wait for the labor to start naturally. Mm-hmm. And they were okay. They said, okay, fine, we'll just let's wait with you then. And during this second day, they told me that they will remove the balloon and insert a second balloon.
Okay.
To see if there will be any progress with the opening. And they did so. They inserted the second balloon for 6 hours. And they told me after 6 hours, we'll give you 3 more hours. And if the labor doesn't start, then we can give you an oxytocin to start the contractions. And we waited for 6 hours. Nothing happened. And 3 hours later, nothing is happening. So they gave me the oxytocin. And after a few minutes, I started now getting the contractions. And they had given me a low dose of oxytocin. So they were not that much, but I could feel that something is happening. Yeah. And at this point, they had also, now they had inserted this this monitor for their baby's heartbeats.
Okay. So the water had maybe broken already.
Yes. Yes, they had broken it already.
Okay.
So we wait. So I started getting the contractions, and then the midwife came and said, okay, you're getting contractions, we can see them, but they're not as strong, so I can add your dosage of oxytocin so that the labor can you can get more contractions and see if your cervix is going to open. And they did that, and then I started getting really bad ones. Really. Really bad ones. And it was so bad. I can't even remember right now. I think now this was the labor. So I felt all that pain, and at some point I couldn't take it. I even, you know, in my birth plan again, I might keep going back and forth. So, but my birth plan had already mentioned that the only pain medication that I wanted was the laughing gas and maybe an injection if at all it's needed. But at this point, I did not. At this point, I thought I will take that injection. I want that injection now.
You mean the epidural?
The epidural, yes. Yeah. Oh, I thought, okay, I need it because the pain was too much and I couldn't handle it. I remember even I was so much in pain. At some point, I think I was shouting and screaming. And after a while, they gave me the epidural and it was bliss. I couldn't feel anything. I couldn't feel anything, but when they were giving me the injection, the epidural injection, that I felt a lot of pain.
I can imagine.
Oh, that one, I cried. That one was bad. That one was really bad. I felt that, but afterwards it was so blissful. I couldn't feel anything, and they were saying, I could see even on the monitor that I'm having really big ones, but I could not feel it, and I was so thankful I could not feel them. So yes, but now even with these contractions, my cervix was not opening. So this was the third day, and at this point, I'm calling my sister and I'm telling her what's happening. And my sister has two kids. And the surgeon had actually just mentioned to me that asked me, "Do you have any? Did your mother go through the process naturally, giving birth naturally?" But I don't know that because my mom is no longer alive. So I told her that my sister had gone through C-section. I never knew that this was somehow connected, you know. So I remember talking to my sister, and she was telling me, oh yeah, my cervix also could not open. And I thought, okay, so I guess this is the same thing that's happening to me at this point. So I tell the surgeon that, well, my sister's cervix could not open, and she had to go through C-section as well to get her babies. And, so she said, okay, so there's a possibility that yours also will not open. I don't know how that is connected, but anyway, they said it's connected. So on the third day.
It's been many hours.
I am so tired. It's been long. And they've like three times talked about the C-section being the only option here. The baby is still okay. And nothing is alarming with him. And now I start, and now my sister has told me this her story, and then I tell my, we talk with my husband and tell him, okay, I think this at this point, nothing is happening naturally, and if we wait for it, we might as well just wait for it forever because my cervix is not opening at all. So I just tell him, I am going to take the C-section option now because it's the only option, seemingly only option. So he's like, okay, yes, I think no, actually he was telling me, I think we can wait for 2 more days.
He was so stuck on the 40.
He was so stuck on the just going there. I told him no, I cannot. I don't think I cannot. I can go another day with the waiting. I'm so tired, and that baby needs to be out. So this was on the 31st, and I told the midwife that the following day I will take the C-section. And at night, so the day that they were giving me the epidural, they left a pipe, a small pipe where they can now, she told me that they will leave this pipe here so that they can be able to insert more epidural if I at all like go through the C-section.
Mm-hmm.
So I sleep through the night, and in the morning they come and see me and ask if I'm going to go through it. And I tell them, yes, let's do this. And I remember I'm preparing. Well, they took me out of the room and they started preparing me. And I was asking. I had already asked them so that my husband will be in the room together with me. And they said it's possible, and they are also preparing him. So they start now numbing me, giving me the numbing medication. But the more they were, I could still feel the pinches they give you. I could still feel the pinches and the cold clothes they put on you. And I couldn't numb. So they eventually decided to put me on a sleep.
General anesthesia.
Yes. So I remember actually during this time, I'm just like asking. At this point, I'm actually super scared, and I'm asking them to please bring my husband in. I need to see him. I need for him to hold me, my hand, and to just be there. And they kept telling me, yes, he's coming. Yes, he's coming. Yes, he's coming. Until I was out, and only to wake up and not see him or the baby. So I think now this is where things just like go down for me, because they after they get the baby out. I'm woken up I cannot remember the time. It's in the morning hours though. But I remember someone shipping me through to the hospital. I could just see the lights, and they were taking me in the recovery ward, and they were saying, congratulations, you have a healthy baby boy. And that was it. So when I get to the ward, I think I pass out because I was in so much. I think they had given me a lot of anesthesia, and I guess I sleep again for some time. And when I wake up, I wake up with all these machines on me. I have something on my nose. I have medication going in needles, and I have a machine standing next to me. I think that was for checking the blood pressure. But I cannot see my baby or my husband. And this is just where now I started crying, and the first thought was something happened to my baby. Why is it why is he not here and where's my husband? And I start crying, and the nurse comes in, and she is asking what's happening, and I'm asking where is my baby, what happened to my baby, and where is my husband? And okay, so the nurse tries to calm me down, and she's telling me that if you have a phone, you can call them. I do not have a phone. I just came from the operating room. Where am I getting the phone from? And so I tell her, okay, I don't have the phone. So can I at least see them? And she tells me that I cannot see them. They cannot come to the to the recovery ward. I don't know why. But she assures me that she's going to get my phone from my husband's ward sent to me. She does so, and a few minutes later I call my husband, and I see them, and that was just so bad. I could not understand why I'm not with them, why they're not next to me, and why I could not hold my baby. And the nurse had actually mentioned to me that I cannot see them until the following day, and that was really what was breaking my heart, because why I just gave birth. Why can't I see the baby? And where has my husband been all this while? I thought he was going to be in the room, okay? So after I talked to them, I couldn't hold it. I just lost it again. really, I think it was probably hormones, but I really cried. And it was really heartbreaking for me that, I mean, let me hold my baby for once. He just came in like a few hours ago, I think. I cannot hold him. I cannot see him. I cannot breastfeed him. I cannot do this skin to skin. What's happening?
Yeah.
So luckily, the surgeon and the doctors who were operating on me came to check on me, and they found me crying and asked what's happening. And I told them, okay, look, I really need to see my family. I need to see my baby, especially the baby. And they said, it's possible. We can just bring the baby here, not your husband. And we can send the baby down for 15 minutes to see you. And then they can go back. And I could not understand why. But anyway, I was so happy that it's 15 minutes. It's really, really short. But they brought the baby, and I remember looking at him and thinking, wow, he's so tiny and so fragile and so perfect. And I started crying again. I was holding him, and I tried breastfeeding him, and it was so hard. I couldn't even sit well because I have these stitches. And I am still I'm in pain. I'm starting to feel the pain. It's numb, but I can still feel, okay, something happened in my stomach.
Yeah.
So it was a lot going on that time.
How long had passed between the birth and the moment you saw him?
So this was, I think, 3 hours now after. Yeah. It was about 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I was in the ward. He was born at 10:30, so that's about 3 hours, yeah. 10:30, yeah. So he goes back to be with the dad, and I'm left alone again. And most of the time I'm asleep, and through the day, I was asking the nurses, okay, when can I see them again? Is it possible to just send me to wherever they are so that I can recover from there? And they said, telling me, no, it's not possible. You have to be here for the night, and then the doctors in the morning will come and decide if you can go up. And I the whole night I waited. In the morning, a doctor came and saw me. They saw me and they told me that I'm recovering well. And in the evening they will come and send me to see my baby. And then I ask again, I request, okay, so can I just see my baby again? And they say, yes, you can. He can come again. So this time they send my husband and the baby. I don't know why they did not send him yesterday with the baby, but he is the one now who brings the baby. And I remember seeing him and being asked. I had so many questions in my head, but I was also relieved that he was okay and he was the one taking care of the baby. And I forgot to mention that also before I slept at night, we video called again and I was able to see them.
Yeah.
So in the evening, actually early evening, yeah, mid-afternoon, they came and told me that they can actually discharge me and I go upstairs. And that's what they did. And I remember getting into the room and I was so happy to be there. And but still I couldn't be able to breastfeed because I did not have any milk. So they helped with the pump, the hospital pump, to help me to see if I could get something out of my breasts. But yes, that's what happened.
Take a deep breath. You can sigh it out. Just let go of that. Yeah, that was a lot.
Oh,
that was a lot.
Yeah, that was.
And you said, you know, you're going back to the birth plan because I think you wanted that birth.
I wanted that birth so badly.
It's not the one you had.
It's not the one I got. Yeah.
So you're in a way sort of grieving that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think sometimes things just never go, just don't go the way that we plan for them to go. And even though that I had this in the, you know, in the back of my mind that a CS might happen, but I never really prepared for it. I was just super prepared for pushing and the yoga, but nothing else I was prepared for. Because I had done all this breathing work, the yoga, I had even found the positions where I could be, you know, I can use to bring the baby down, and all these things that, you know, the internet shares with us. And but I was not in any way prepared for the operation. Yeah.
And also the, you know, what to do if there is preeclampsia. And what to do if there is an induction.
Yes.
How to make an induction more effective.
Yes.
So I think a lot of the information is about how to avoid an induction. And not necessarily like what to do when there is a need for an induction, like preeclampsia perhaps. The high blood pressure, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And also what sounds to me like was the really challenging part was not necessarily, you know, the having the cesarean done, but from what you were saying, it was more about how you were treated after.
Yes. Yes.
And the attention you got and didn't get.
Yes.
And the sounds like you weren't given adequate explanation as to why things were done the way they were, or why baby and father cannot be there.
Yeah.
With you, why you have to stay overnight in the recovery ward.
Yeah.
So because from your story, you were saying, you know, I I decided to do a cesarean, a birth. I understood it was, you know, and in that part, you sounded quite like that wasn't the emotionally challenging bit for you. But what was really the challenging part was the part after. I mean, going under general anesthesia and then not knowing where your baby is. And that's really traumatic. I mean, imagine if we think about our mammalian instincts, a mammal giving birth to her baby and then waking up and not knowing where they are. And I mean, this is really
going very strongly
against every cell in your body.
This was the part that really, really tore my heart down, like into pieces. And yes, like you're saying, I did not get any explanation. Like, why are they not here? I asked the nurse, and she told me that the doctor is going to tell me. And the doctor just came and told me that this is a recovery ward; they cannot come here, but we will release you whenever. It's possible for you to go be with your family. Yes.
Would you say also this feeling of helplessness?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It felt like I was trapped. Yeah. I could not really do much. I could cry and all, but there was not so much I could do. I'm tied in all these machines. I cannot even move myself.
This is the feeling I'm getting in my body.
So much pain. Yes.
Yeah. Like as you're talking about this, I feel myself like I'm like stuck and want to just like break free and scream and run away and find that baby.
Yes. Yes.
I really feel it in my body from hearing your story.
Yeah,
so I can only imagine how strongly you felt it in your body when you were living
really
it.
Bad. Yeah, it was really, really yeah. It's a horrible experience, and I hope they something really gets done with that part of separating both the mom and the child, especially. I think that's not the best way to approach it. No matter how, even if they're in the recovery ward, I think something has to be done up with that.
Yeah.
It was bad. Yeah. Yeah.
Would you like to then tell us a little bit about the days after in the hospital stay?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. So I stayed in the hospital from the time that I got there, 7 days. And it was a bit of both bitter and sweet, and the sweet part being that I was with my family again, and like on a constant, I was just being there with them, the bitter part is somehow I felt neglected by the nurses. Not all of them, because like I said, I really got some really good nurses there. But at some point I was feeling a bit neglected when I would call and the baby needed milk or a wash. And at this point, I want to mention that there's a time that my husband had already left the hospital to come home and to get more supplies for us and change of clothes and the car seat. So this time when he left, I noticed that I wasn't getting the attention that I was getting when he was there. And whenever I remember whenever we would ring the bell, someone was coming. But when I was left alone, I would actually wait for quite long for someone to come over and help me. And so this was not a good experience for me. But apart from that, the pain was, it's, I don't know how to explain it, because I was numb, but at the same time I was in pain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense. Like, I can feel that really something was cut. My stomach is cut,
yeah.
But I'm also in pain. I cannot I cannot explain both of them. But yes, the following days they were bittersweet. Of course, me getting one side, I would get the help from the nurses, and on the other side, sometimes I would just like have to wait. And at some point, I remember pushing my baby and myself to go look for milk because I had called and called, and the baby was crying, and I didn't have the milk yet from my boob, from my breast. And I remember just really pushing. I was in so much pain, but I woke up and I took the bed, his bed, and I put my hands on it to support me.
Yes.
And
roll
I just
it.
Roll it. I pushed one step and I could not find the milk. I don't know where they had hidden it. But by the time I got to that other side, a nurse showed up and I asked, okay, where can I get the milk from? And she told me that she's bringing the milk. And luckily for me, I just again rolled back to my ward. And yes, this part was also a bit because I could not, like I said, I still felt a bit caged because I could not really do much because of the pain. And this is the time that I needed someone to help me. But I kept on ringing the bell and ringing. And at this point, the baby is too hungry. And I just had to figure out what to do. And that's how it was, the recovery.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to breastfeed him then later?
So yes, by the time on the third day, because I've been pumping, I started getting some milk, and I started breastfeeding him, and that part was also a bit hard because my breasts were also very sensitive, but I could tell that he's getting some milk from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, but it wasn't much. So by the time we were released from the hospital, we had to get some milk from the supermarket for the first few days. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And after that, I mean, then were you then that, able to?
Yeah, so I think on the eighth, on the probably the tenth day, I was able to fully breastfeed and keep off the milk. The supermarket, the nun, I was able to fully breastfeed, and all through now, since then, all through until up now, I'm still fully breastfeeding the boy. Yeah.
Well, that's encouraging.
Yes. Yes. Oof.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
You really triumphed through the challenges and, Yeah,
it was. I was saying if there was this one experience that really made me strong was giving birth. It was really. I thought it's the pregnancy, but this part was the one that got me standing on my feet. Really,
and when you say that it made you strong. What do you mean? Because one question I also like to ask is, what do you feel like you learned about being a mother from your birth?
Yeah. So, listen, in my, like I had told you before, I had mentioned that I had this fear that I did not want to go through the C-section. But I eventually just decided, okay, we just have to do this. This was like a trying moment for me, and I just had to face my fear and, you know, just go for it, because I was thinking if there was no C-section, then how else would I have gotten this baby? You know, this was the only option for me, and I was, no matter how long I avoided it, I was still going to go through it. So this is what really just made my mind, we have to get this baby out. And the only way we can get this baby out is through the C-section, and you have to go through it no matter what. There's no avoiding it. So
I'm going to just jump in and interfere here one moment with the episode to let you know that we had a little bit of a technical difficulty while recording this, and we had to start a new recording. And that's why I'm going to ask Alma a question once again, and she's going to respond. And I didn't want to edit away the answers to either one of the questions because they were both so valuable. So if that's why you're going to hear the same question being asked again, in the second part of the episode. So stay with us to hear how this episode ends. So usually at the end of episodes, I like to ask, what do you feel like you've taken away from your birth experience into your motherhood? And you were saying about feeling strong.
Yes. So I was saying that I thought that the pregnancy was the one thing that I really experienced, and I thought that this was it. This is the strongest part for me. But I think both the pregnancy and the giving birth, especially the giving birth part, was the biggest for me because of facing this one fear of going through the C-section. I did not in my wildest dreams, I did not really expect for things to go the way they went. So the fact that I, after 3 days, I just made up my mind and said, okay, this is the only way that this baby is going to get to us. I have to go through it, and I have to deal with it. Whatever happens after, I have to deal with it, because anyway, there's no other way that we could bring him to this world. So that's one thing. I think my strength was derived from the fact that I just made up my mind to face this one fear and go through with it. To get my baby. Yeah.
Do you find yourself now facing your fears more as
Yes.
Yeah.
Truly, there are so many, there's a few major life changes that are happening in my life, and I feel like this has the strength part has contributed to it, and me going through them right now. Yes.
Wow.
It's happening, yeah.
Wow, makes you feel stronger.
Truly, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's inspiring that you've taken it in that way, and that you've managed to extract strength from an experience that was also very much crushing and very kind of heavy for you in many ways.
Truly, So, I would also like to mention that you know, the thing is, like, this is what I also told myself, that things will not go the way we plan in our heads. Sometimes we will just plan, like, look for me, like, at me, look at me. I had only one plan and only one line for the C-section, which, like, is the full thing that happened for me. So I had planned all this beautiful birth plan and everything that's going to happen, and it just didn't go that way. And sometimes things will not go the way we plan them for them to go, and it really, that's okay. Is there another way that you can go, or is there another path that you can take that can lead you to where you want to go? I think that's another lesson I picked from it, from that experience. Yeah.
Love it. And as we spoke in the beginning, looking at your fear, one of the things that I'm encouraged to do now in preparing for a second birth is what I didn't do with my first, was making a plan for cesarean birth. You know, if I get to a cesarean birth, what will I want there specifically?
Yes.
So to be very clear about that, as you said, to add more than just one line.
Yes. You see, if I had a doula, I would have been told this.
Yeah. Definitely recommend a doula.
Totally. Yeah.
But again, it's about the understanding of being willing to look at those fears, and it's not easy. And I thought that by not thinking about that, it won't happen to me. And if I think about it, I'm calling for it or manifesting.
Mm-hmm.
Manifesting it.
Yeah.
I have to manifest the positive birth, so I shouldn't think about anything else. Mm. That's a bit tricky. And because if some things do happen, you are more surprised and caught off guard rather than thinking about it for 1 or 2 days, making your cesarean birth plan around
yes.
that, and then just stopping thinking about it for the rest of your pregnancy.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least then you have some kind of plan. So just to mention to anyone who is pregnant listening to this, consider making a cesarean birth plan as well.
That's right. Yeah. And also one thing I also think I told myself that I will deal with the repercussions, but also that came with a lot of emotions, and it came with a lot of I was angry, you know, because of how things went, and I was really, really, really mad at everything that went on. And I remember venting to a mom's group sometimes ago during that time, like it's been months already. But one thing I did that I think helped really a lot was with the anger was and with the healing as well, was me writing it down.
Yes.
So this really helped me a lot once I put everything that had happened, because I wrote really, I think, like 6 pages of everything that happened from the Nevola to me getting back home. I wrote everything down, and somehow I think that worked, because I started getting so much calmer and not even thinking about it anymore, and just being okay with the fact that it happened and moving on from there.
Yeah.
So that really helped me a lot. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Yes. Writing the birth story, telling the story.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe a quick question. Did you have a chance to ask for your medical records from the hospital about the birth? Are you interested in that, or have you thought about that? Or because sometimes those things can give us answers to questions that have not been answered.
Uh-huh.
And you have a right to ask for that for your medical file from the birth.
No, I did not. I did not know that I can ask.
Yeah. Well, this is a message to you and anyone else who is listening.
Yes.
You can definitely call back to the hospital and to ask for more opportunity to talk about the birth experience and to receive the files and the transcript maybe of what happened and how it happened. And
so I remember when I was ranting in this mom's group that they told me, because I was completely off with the general anesthesia, that's the reason why they could not bring my husband in. But and I remember calling the hospital to ask to speak to someone. But that never progressed, actually. That didn't go. I cannot remember well, but I can look for the files. I can ask for the files for sure, yes. Mm. Mm. Yes.
That can also help a lot of women feel some kind of closure or, you know, get more information to unanswered questions.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Totally. That's not a good feeling either, you know, to be walking around with all these uncertainties that you're not even sure where to find the answers to.
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
I think after me writing it down and calming down, I totally just forgot about it. But it's still somewhere in the back of my mind, really. Like I cannot just brush it off totally. I can ask for more. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So with this, I want to say a big thank you for coming on to this episode to share your story and experience. To tell us also about this and how you've come out the other side and what an important impact our birth story has on us, right? And
right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me. And like I had mentioned, that this is part of my healing process, and I am so thankful to have shared this story with you.
Yes. Okay. I'm glad.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. See you soon.
Hey, thank you for listening to this episode, and welcome back next week. Just before you go, I want to ask you a question. Do you want postpartum support from people around you, but struggle with asking for help? Do you feel awkward to have this kind of conversation? Are you not really sure what to say? I've got you covered, and I've created just the guide for you. It's a word-for-word script that will help you feel confident to have this hard conversation. You will also receive the three crucial elements for a request for help, which will turn it from a nice idea into a reality. Until now, this script has been used only by my clients, and this will be the first time that it is offered for free. It's your chance to receive a great tool which has guided many of my clients in overcoming their fear of asking for help and allowed them to build their village. Do you want the guide that will help you build yours? You can download it now by visiting motherstransition.com.
Thank you for tuning in to the Birthing in Finland podcast. To get the show notes for this episode, go to doulacollective.fi/birthing in Finland. If you enjoyed the episode, go ahead and share this with someone who you think needs to hear it. A friend, a colleague, a neighbor. Help us get the word out so that more families can start enjoying these conversations. See you next time when I introduce you to another amazing person supporting families just like yours.